9:02, but first up this Thursday morning, in defense of P3 schools, there's still lots of criticisms over Nova Scotia government's decision back in the 90s to go down the public-private partnership road to get new schools built. But a new report out this week by the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies suggests the P3 schools were, well, more successful than imagined. School Hills Consulting's Paul Bennett is the author of the report entitled Reinventing the Building of Schools. And Paul Bennett joins me on the phone to start off our day here today. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you doing this morning, sir?
Very well. Thanks for asking.
I'm glad you could join us here to tell us a bit about this thing. And again, P3 schools have been much maligned, but you're suggesting that, well, tell us what it is you're saying here this morning.
My new report, entitled Reinventing the Building of Schools, is the first thorough look at the public-private partnership schools in Nova Scotia, of which there were 39 built between 1997 and 2001, and which are now coming up for repurchase by the government of Nova Scotia. And what I did was I took a look at, from beginning to end, the experience of Nova Scotia with public-private partnerships in education. And I came to the conclusion that there was a huge myth that had been circulated that these were all bad deals and they worked to the disadvantage of taxpayers. In fact, when you look at my report and a 2000 report by Deloitte, no one has ever proven anything other than it's difficult to determine whether, in the end, the taxpayers got the best bang for the buck.
But did we not?
We do know this, Rick. We do know that in the space of 5 years, Nova Scotia acquired 39 schools, all of which have been now reviewed, for the most part, by school review processes, and they've all been found to have been in good or better condition and better maintained and in some ways better managed than the existing fleet of schools.
Well, no question, we got ourselves some new schools and state-of-the-art schools as well. But the question that many of the critics point to is the cost, and did it not end up costing the taxpayers millions more to go down the P3 route than had it tried alternative financing somehow?
There's no evidence of that other than a bunch of assertions coming from the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, because all they presented in a report they released about a year ago was the costs of doing the construction. What my report does is it takes a comparator. If we had used public procurement, what would the costs have been? And I compare in each and every stage what the comparative costs are. I take the 9 schools built by Nova Learning and show that over the 20-year life of the program, that taxpayers may well have benefited to the tune of $14 million for just those 9 schools. What it does show is my conclusions are very much aligned with those of the Nova Scotia Auditor General. They reaffirm all of the findings of 2 reports, and they actually, for the first time, try to compare what it would have cost under public ownership and what we actually gained. One of the things that's not in any of the previous reports is any comparators as to what it would have cost if we'd used strictly public procurement methods.
Are you suggesting then, Paul, just to be clear here, are you suggesting that it was not a whole lot more expensive for us to build these P3 schools than had we gone out on our own on this?
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. Overall, over the 20-year life of the program, keep in mind that all these previous reports never, ever disclosed how much the province borrowed in order to build the schools, never disclosed how many cost overruns there were in regular procurement. Keep in mind and I show the difference between public procurement and private public partnership procurement, and I show the advantages of actually doing P3 P3 procurement. I'll give you a couple of examples. All of the P3 contracts that were entered into were performance contracts. Everybody that was in that contract was required to produce results and to actually demonstrate benefit. All of the public procurement contracts are subscription contracts. Basically, what they say is you've got, you've got $10 million to build an elementary school, and then the individual contracts are let for various stages, And then what happens is after everything's approved, there are cost overruns, there are design changes, and there are change orders that substantially drive up the cost of public procurement. This wasn't happening with the P3 schools. In my report, makes this very clear. The first six schools, the first six of the 39, they were an adventure and mistakes were made. And I document the mistakes that were made. The last 33, which were bundled, ended up saving taxpayers probably millions of dollars.
But you're suggesting that the hype over what was perceived to be the added cost is politics?
Oh, yes. And here's why. Because from the very beginning, Rick, you know, the opposition was that this was the privatization of education.
Mm.
And doing my research, I kind of found out two very interesting little things, that the Canadian Union of Public Employees spent $1 million trying to discredit P3 schools. Okay, they had a fund, they funded all the research, and it was all about making sure that the employees were public sector workers, union members. What's really weird about Nova Scotia is, with a few exceptions, all of the private contractors agreed to use union labor, so that was taken out of the mix. Here's another thing. Did you know that one of the three major partners in the P3s is the Ontario Municipal Employees Pension Fund?
Did not know that.
That is not even in the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives report. Here's what was really going on. The Canadian or the Ontario Municipal Pension Employees Union actually saw the benefit of investing in 15 of the P3 schools. So none of this has actually been discussed in the public domain here. But when you read through my report, it's the first report that shows it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there were mistakes made, which I document. But overall, I'm just saying, isn't it time that we looked at the total legacy? And I do make recommendations for improving our current capital planning process, and they all mirror and echo the attorney general or the auditor general's recommendations. I'd be glad to go through my reforms. I'm very sure that we can learn and improve the capital planning process.
And just to look beyond the schools, there's talk now about possibly going down the P3 route in regards to replacing the Victoria General Hospital. You're saying that wouldn't be such a bad idea?
Not at all. In fact, the research shows that right across this country, and indeed across all of North America, it would be impossible to build large public infrastructure projects of $50 million or more without public-private partnerships. You'd be hard-pressed to find any government anywhere that isn't engaged in this. One of the problems with the P3 schools is they were, at the beginning, the public sector partners did not know what they were doing. My report documents how poorly prepared the public sector managers were for the initiative that Dr. John Savage and his government dropped on them. One of the real stories here is, you know, there was a reinventing government movement that it was kind of like going passing everywhere. From 1993 to 1996, every government in the Western world was believed in reinventing government, making it more responsive to the public, bringing in entrepreneurial spirit. And as you may recall, Dr. John Savage was in the forefront of that. This was the signal and the most important project. It's supposed to be a lighthouse for reinventing government services, make them more accountable, make them more entrepreneurial, make them more flexible. And of course, there were huge mistakes made in the first 6 years. But we make a big mistake by judging the entire program on the basis of the initial two or three projects.
You mentioned reforms. You've made a number of recommendations. What's the big recommendation out of your
big
report?
Big recommendation, and for your listeners, you'd be very interested in this. It is, we do need to make a higher priority on school capital planning, and it is not acceptable to produce a list and to have the cabinet cherry-pick the projects they want that happen to be in the premier's riding or the minister's riding. That has to change. So the number one recommendation is we need to have a complete overhaul of the school capital planning process, and it needs to be a higher priority. Second priority would be to end the confusion and the logjam between what the province does and what the school boards do. Every time you look at the school review process, you're struck by the contradiction between the fact that the school boards close schools and the province opens them. This is really not in the interest of the public, and this is one of my key recommendations. End the division between the province and the school boards on school capital planning. They need a joint team so that this is actually works. A third thing would be, whatever we do, do not go back to traditional public procurement, which is not in the interest, ultimately, of the public. And I give a few examples. The cost controls are not there. There is actually less public participation. One of the reasons that the government province didn't like P3s was, believe it or not, the private contractors were more interested in forming consulting groups, building joint teams with parents and the school boards, and they worked very much harder at building public participation into the design of those schools.
9:13 is our time. Paul Bennett with Schoolhouse Consulting on the line with me. I want to talk about an issue that's affecting schools right now, and that is a decision by the school board to expand, to add another 30 minutes to the day for kids in primary to grade 2. And I'm looking here at a comment from one psychologist who doesn't think it's a great idea. In fact, he calls it a mistake. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, what a fascinating question, Rick. What really happened was that the Halifax Regional School Board was advised that they were not meeting the minimum number of hours. They were out of line with the rest of the province. It is clearly an effort on the part of the province to ensure that there are minimum numbers of hours for students. So this has all got lost in the discussion because it was presented as a fait accompli to the Halifax Regional School Board trustees that this was a change and that it was a wonderful change. Well, without any context, no wonder people are coming to conclusions. I would ask, just fundamentally, how did this change come about? Is it as a result of the Halifax Regional Board being out of sync with all the other school systems? And I would venture to say that what happened was that they found out that over the last 5 years, the kids in these grades, P to 2, I guess, were missing hundreds and hundreds of hours of schooling that others were having. There's another factor. With the work to rule, Rick, remember that the teachers are leaving, 20 minutes after? So is that part of this? We need to know how much of this was driven by what they discovered as a result of the work to rule.
Interesting. Never a dull moment, huh?
The press release that and the announcement by Elwin LaRue that this was he was delighted to say that school day was expanding I just read it and I started laughing. No wonder it's blowing up.
Well, and I've heard from a number of parents who aren't so delighted with the news. But
have they been told how far short the kids were in HRN compared to those and all the other? Across the country, somebody needs to give them the information as to how this decision was made and why it was made. There's a big void here, and I really fault the Halifax Regional School Board for not being open enough in disclosing why the decision was made, and I suspect it's that they were called to account for not having enough hours in their program.
As always, appreciate your time and your expertise in this matter. Paul, thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting me on.
Have a great day, sir. Bye-bye. Paul Bennett with Schoolhouse Consulting, and again, his report done for the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies.